This is Karon Poe. I'm 15 years old, a sophomore at Brashear High School.
This is Theron Coleman. I'm 17 years old and a junior at Brashear High School. You're listening to Streaming Justice, Music and Conversation about Civil Rights, Past, Present, and Future in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day.
Today we're talking about Martin Luther King, things that I know about Martin Luther King. He graduated at the age of 15 years old. He graduated high school at 15. He led the Civil Rights Movement in the 1950s. He won a Nobel Prize in 1964. He's against racism. He led the boycott. It was 382 days.
He also enrolled in graduate studies at Boston University, completing his residence for the doctorate in 1953 and receiving the degree in 1955. In Boston, he met his wife, Coretta Scott, a young woman in uncommon intellectual artist attainments. Two sons and two daughters were born into the family.
Martin Luther King changed a lot of people. He wanted everyone to be free. Protesting back then, we still protest nowadays, so it's still the same. Not a lot has changed.
And when he protested, back then, he used nonviolent resistance. That is the practice of achieving goals through symbolic protest, civil disobedience, without violence. Karon, what do you think about what's going on with nonviolent resistance today?
I think nonviolent resistance during protests is still happening. How about you?
I think it's still going as well. I believe it's going on in other countries too, not just the USA, and the other races other than blacks are going through things as well.
We're going to ask Vaughn Madden, the director of Shedding Student Athletes, some questions. How do you feel about Martin Luther King and what he has done?
I feel Martin Luther King is a big inspiration, not just to me, but to the African-American community and to the entire world. He stood for, equality, not just for the uplifting of African-Americans, but also for anybody that was, fighting for social justice. So I think, his legacy is very, very much important for today. I think is what he stood for with the nonviolent movement. It's still doing today. So if you look at, some of the things that happened nationally with Eric Garner and Mike Brown, that there's people still protesting today and still using protest peacefully. Even though sometimes the news may portray things a little different, there's a lot of propaganda that goes on in these type of movements. But I really love what Martin Luther King stood for, that mm-hmm. no matter what adversity he was fighting up against, he was willing to pursue his dream through nonviolence, which is tremendous, because, I don't think I would be able to, go through that same type of adversity without getting physical at some point.
What else do you think is going around in the world that basically came from Martin Luther King Jr.?
Other things around the world that inspired different apartheids across the globe. I can't really speak too intelligently on a lot of things that are happening international. But just for things that are going on in the United States, I think it sparked a passion for our youth. There's a fire that initiated with a lot of young people wanting to step up and stand out against inequalities or any injustice.
Me, Karon, I know some things in Pittsburgh that happened with race. My cousin Leon was shot 5 times by a white male police officer in Zone 5 on November 11, 2012. Leon got pulled over by the police for running a stop sign. He was an African-American male teenager driving. Leon provided his license, registration, and insurance to the officer. They used a stereotype that a young black male was driving a nice car and with the white shirt on had a weapon or drugs on him. Leon had nothing on him. He did everything they asked until he felt threatened. The shots were fired, and now Leon is paralyzed and have no control of his lower body. Leon was found not guilty of his charges, but it does not stop there. The officer is still on the street and has his job. I believe no officer, after trying to kill someone or killing someone, should be on duty or not be in jail.
So with that situation being so close to you, how do you feel as a young African-American male, you know, walking home from school, walking from practice, you know, going to the store? How does that make you feel? Do you feel safe when you're walking in the community?
No, I do not feel safe. I feel threatened. I feel I could just, like, be walking down the street from practice and something could happen to me. A police, anybody, any race, white male, anybody.
So, Theron, how do, you know, could you answer that question? Like, how do you feel when you're, you know, moving about?
I feel threatened as well because I always have my phones in my hand, and a police officer can tell me to take my hands out of my pockets and it'd be my phone, but they might mistake it for something else.
So what do you think we can do as young African-Americans, you know, both of y'all being student-athletes, what do you think you can do to help raise awareness of black men aren't, you know, violent, you know, all black men aren't thugs?
Try to stop the stereotypes, and protest if protesting will help.
How do you stop stereotypes?
Young African-American males have to stop committing black-on-black crime and doing drugs and everything else, every other stereotype.
And also carrying ourselves better as in men instead of doing things that no one else would really do.
Do you think the media plays a part in that?
Yes.
In the perception of African-American men?
Yes, because sometimes once they see somebody, a young black man dressed in all black, they think he's up to something or doing something that he's not supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. I also feel walking and at any place I'm in danger because of the bad stereotypes that they have on us young African-American males. And I think we should improve our graduation rate in high school and college and start focusing more on education.
I'm gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days, hallelujah. I'm gonna sit at the welcome table. I'm gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days, one of these days. I'm gonna be a registered voter, oh Lord. I'm gonna be a registered voter one of these days, hallelujah. I'm gonna be a registered voter. I'm gonna be a registered voter one of these days. I'm gonna tell God on old Massey, oh Lordy. I'm gonna tell God on old Massey one of these days, hallelujah. I'm gonna tell God on old Massey. I'm gonna tell God on old Massey one of these days. We're gonna tell him as we sit at the table. I'm gonna sit at the welcome table, oh Lord. I'm gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days, hallelujah. I'm gonna sit at the welcome table. I'm gonna sit at the welcome table one of these days.
The song you just heard was I'm Gonna Sit at the Welcome Table by Hollis Watkins. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, Music and Conversation about Civil Rights, Past, Present, and Future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Day, with Theron Coleman,
Karan Poe,
and Vaughn Mata.
If you like what you're hearing and want to join in the conversation, we'd love to have your participation. You can call or text us at 412-200-5975. And please consider letting other people know that Streaming Justice continues until midnight at slbradio.org.
Now we'll be talking about sports because we're shadow student athletes. On July 31st, Riley Cooper made a quote, "I will fight every nigger here." How do you feel about that, Theron?
I feel that was just ignorant because he was at a concert. He might have been drunk too, I'm not sure, but yeah, that was just stupid of him to say that.
How about you, Vaughn?
When I first heard of it, I wasn't surprised. This for me, you know, being in sports my whole life, being in college and being around that type of atmosphere and just understanding that people, when they're upset and angry, their true feelings usually come out. But it did bother me, the fact that he's a role model. Students look up to him. Children look up to him. And anytime you're, you know, in front of a camera or television or play for a major sports team, I feel you have a responsibility as to be a good example for our youth. And that's something that, you know, if you do have those ill feelings towards African Americans, that's something that I feel that there should be some type of counseling class for people who, you know, feel any negativity towards, you know, towards races. I think he should have been having, you know, some type of consequence. But I don't think anything came of it.
Do you think that we shouldn't be surprised that he said that?
It's like 50-50. Indifferent for both. So just for me studying, you know, racing sports in college, I still do get surprised when I'm more surprised when there's no repercussions sometimes, when there's always repercussions for when African-American athletes, especially on major sports team, do anything that's, you know, controversial. There's always some type of repercussion or consequence. So I get surprised, not by the statement, but when there's nothing done.
Did Riley Cooper get fined or anything for saying this?
I'm not too sure.
Theron, what do you think about the Clippers NBA owner saying to his girlfriend, "Don't take pictures with black people"?
I don't really understand that because he was born in Chicago, Illinois, and there wasn't any slavery back then up there. I would have thought he was born down south by him saying that, but he wasn't. And I think that the NBA did what was right and fired him and got a new owner for the Clippers.
Vaughn, do you feel that his consequences were good?
Yeah, the consequences for him losing the team definitely is the first step. But I think they should have did a clean house, looking at some of the top execs. So I'm pretty sure he wasn't the only one that had those ill feelings. So I think, you know, making him resign as the owner was a huge step.
Do you feel that there should be more African American owners in the NFL, MLB, NHL, or NBA?
Absolutely. I feel that African American athletes dominate the sports, but they do not have power when it comes to making executive decisions, when it comes to, you know, their health care, when it comes to, you know, distributing responsibilities equally. So I think it would be a good thing for the game to have any minority, you know, owner, not even just African American, but a Latino, you know, Asian, somebody that's, you know, different than the standard.
Theron, do you know anything about the college graduation rates of African Americans?
I know that the University of Central Florida, in 2011, the NCAA men's basketball tournament teams indicate that only 59% of black players graduated compared to the 91% of white players who completed their undergraduate studies. And also that Kansas had 14% of blacks that graduated and 100% of whites that graduated. And also that not a single FBS football school graduated, less than 50% of white student athletes, but 26% of the bowl-bound schools graduated less than half of their black student athletes.
Vaughn, do you know anything about the graduation rate?
The graduation rates, I know a few different things. I know some of the top schools who graduate African-American student athletes versus their counterparts. So, like, for instance, the University of Northwestern University is the number one school who has the highest black male student athlete graduation rates. Notre Dame's second, Villanova's third, Penn State's fourth, Vanderbilt's fifth. And then if you look at some of the schools that some of the universities with the lowest black student athletes graduation rates are Iowa State, University of South Florida, Arizona. So those type of schools do have, say, 57% African-Americans on their football team, about 60% on their basketball team, but only 30% of those 50 will graduate, you know, not even just on time, but just for a period. They'll either drop out of school or enter the NBA or NFL draft. So looking at graduation rates is highly important, because a lot of student athletes just go to schools based on their chances of going to the NFL or NBA, but only 98% of student athletes that are leaving collegiate sports will find jobs outside of sports. Only 2% will go professionally. So that's something that is very important when you look at media, how they portray, you know, they try to get young student athletes, because there's 57 million high school student athletes across the country, and everything's geared towards being the best baseball player, football mm-hmm. player, baseball player. So it's a misrepresentation in the media, and it affects the graduation rates because everybody puts all their time and energy into sports.
So we all feel that African-American athletes should focus on being an athlete and graduating instead of going straight from their sport to getting money.
Yes, because if you got an athletic scholarship, I think you should basically abuse it for your academic purposes and finish school and get maybe one or two degrees and then enter the league in whichever sport you play.
So we have, like, you say Ad Tinker, for instance. Ad Tinker played for Pitt, and he had an opportunity to stay in school like 6 years and play football, but he also was in, you know, finished his undergrad and went back to school to get a second degree. So I always tell students to, you know, redshirt. There's so much pressure to play your first year. So mm-hmm. you redshirt that first year, you actually have, you can go as a grad student and get a master's or a second degree, still under scholarship as well. So I understand when you say, you know, abuse it in that way, where, because, you know, collegiate sports, they'll abuse you. They'll take, you know, all your time, 25 to 30 hours a week, you know, playing sports, and then you don't have no time to develop no skills outside of sports, like belonging to no other clubs. A lot of times we do fail. So being a student athlete is something that, you know, we do as shadow student athletes, is to make sure that students are prepared, not just academically, but for society. So we try to introduce them to, you know, other opportunities outside of sports. So we got things like, you know, Beyond the Whistle, you know, looking at different career options, different opportunities to, you know, broaden their horizons. So I do have a question. You being a student, how do you prepare differently, you know, for your academics versus athletics? Is it the same? Do you attack, you know, math homework or English the same way you practice?
Yes, I do, Karan. Because I feel education is key. In sports, you won't always have sports around your whole entire life. And if you have a degree, you could succeed past sports. So I make sure my GPA in high school is great, so that when I go to college, I should succeed after.
What's your GPA?
3.5.
I agree with everything that he said, because once, like, if you go to the league for about 10 years and don't have a degree, then you'll just have to live off the money that you made from the league. But if you have a degree and get hurt in the league after like 3 years, you can use that degree to create your own business and still provide for your family and everything that you need.
When you think of the word student athlete, what comes to mind?
The worst?
The word student athlete.
When I hear student athlete, I think of a person, an athlete that plays a sport, obviously, and like their education, their GPA and stuff, it's up there, so they manage how to be an athlete and how to get their education.
When I hear of the word student athlete, I think of someone that has very good time management and excels at everything that they do in sports and school. By not just being an athlete, but also being a good student.
Being a student athlete, do you think people treat you different when it comes to being an African-American male student athlete versus being a white student athlete inside the classroom?
Yes, because I know some teachers at Bashir are harder than you than others because they know that you play sports and have to keep your grades up and everything, and some teachers just don't really care about what you do.
I feel there's a lot of help when you're a student athlete because, for instance, Vaughn is a mentor, and he keeps the athletes pushed, like he keeps us pushing and on pace with our grades and stuff. He helps us out a lot.
Do you think you get special treatment inside the school from teachers?
I wouldn't say that. I think a lot of my teachers push me, and I like that because I need that push. I don't want to just have no motivation.
For everybody, just in general, do you think teachers treat student athletes, you know, they don't have as much pressure on them, since, you know, there's some stereotypes about black student athletes not being as smart as their counterparts. Do you think teachers are less, you know, more lenient towards you turning in papers late versus some of your counterparts?
Yeah, yes.
In my AP classes, I don't think so, because the teachers know that some courses are hard, like AP Physics. My teacher let everyone turn in their papers late, right before grades close, so that they can get the grade that they know that they can get.
So you said you feel teachers are indifferent. Could you elaborate a little more on that?
Yeah, some teachers, like, if you're an athlete, if you come late to class, they feel like they could take a practice away from you, and they try to, like, use that to their advantage to, like, pick with you for them.
Right. Could you speak of some, give me an example, like, have it ever happened to you or another student?
Yeah. My brother, he was, like, late to class, and they try to assign him a detention, but at Bashir, like, you get a warning for being late the first time, but since he's an athlete, they try to attack him and, like, give him a detention right away.
So you feel being an African-American, you know, student athlete, they try to have this super expectation on you that's not the same expectations aren't there for other students?
Yes.
Could you give an example that you experienced or that you know someone of that had that similar situation happen to them there?
I don't believe so. I haven't really encountered one of those.
How is the interactions with, you know, other coaches, you know, versus, because you have a white student come late to practice and then a black student come late to practice, is there any difference how coaches respond?
Not to me, because everybody get the same treatment. If you're late, you got to run hills, and if you're not, practice on regular times.
I feel that African-American coaches, they understand other African-American athletes better than some white coaches because they experience what they've been through and white coaches haven't.
So you feel white coaches lack connectivity of like family circumstances?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I just know there's a few incidents, me being a player and being a coach now, where some coaches don't understand family situations. And I remember one time when I was in high school, I had a family emergency, and I told the coach, and he swore I was lying. Yeah. And I had to call. I had my mom call, and then he felt like my mom was calling, sticking up for me because, you know, I just feel that he didn't trust me different, but there was tons of kids, you know, white students, athletes who went to a funeral, and it was, the interaction was different.
Yeah.
So do you see different interactions when coaches are addressing those certain situations?
Yes, because before I had to quit basketball this year, some players were allowed to miss Saturday practice and came whenever they want, while a couple other players got in trouble for missing practice and everything.
I feel like with Vaughn's situation, the coach, I feel family comes before sports. So if you have a family emergency, you should be able to go take care of what you have to take care of with the family emergency.
So you think you shouldn't get punished for it?
Yeah, I feel you shouldn't get punished for it.
So you feel athletes do get punished for missing practice for like family emergencies?
Yeah. For example, I had an emergency with my family member, and my football coach wouldn't allow me to miss practice. So for my consequence, the next game I had to sit out a quarter because I missed practice.
Right. Do you think that would be different if it was a white student athlete?
Yeah, I feel like he would be more lenient with him and understand.
Why is that?
I really don't understand. I don't know why. Probably because he doesn't have the connection. And like, once again, he doesn't understand what happens in an African American's house compared to a white's house. I think the difference is usually some cases whites have more money than African Americans in the home. And like, blacks are athletes and we're real good at being athletes, so we push to make it to the NFL and make it to the NBA so we could have the money fall back on our family and they could live good.
I agree with what Karan said because some whites already have the money and are living wealthy and everything, while most black families are living in poverty and need the money for the family to succeed in life.
So just in the heat of all the controversy that's going on in the country, we talk about, you know, the legacy of Martin Luther King. We talk about police brutality, white silence, and, you know, the racial disparities in the sports. 2015, we still are going through, seems like no difference. I think it's more televised because there's more social media. I think with, you know, everything happening today and everything that happened back then, we're still, to me personally, like in the same space. So just as, you know, organization who empowers student athletes to have voice and speak out, you know, we try to take the charge to dispel any myths when it comes to African-American student athletes. I think student athletes have, especially at this point in time, the influence that student athletes have, like Jackie Robinson, he used a platform to stand against racism. Muhammad Ali took a stance against any injustice. And I think today's athletes, you know, fall short when it comes to really, really taking a stance for someone as the magnitude of, you know, LeBron James or another African-American athlete that has tons of resources, tons of things available to him, and has, you know, enough power to say, you know, stop this, stop that. I think that would be very, very beneficial, not just to the African-American community, but to this American society as a whole. So just being student athletes, we just want to encourage other student athletes to use their voice, you know, whether, you know, black or white, no matter creed, religion, family, economic background. We just want people just to stand up because everybody, sports brings everybody together for the moment. If you look at the World Cup, there's countries like literally going to war. Before that 60 minutes of that, 90 minutes of that soccer game, people are in the stands cheering. So I think using sports to, you know, address racial issues is, I think it's a powerful tool. So what do you think how, you know, you being a student athlete, you know, after, you know, some history of race, what can you do differently today?
I agree with what Vaughn said about everything. I feel like if LeBron James made a stand and said something on social media, because he has so many people following him about, like, ending white silence, it could change, and it might be a major change because he has so many people following.
I agree with what they both are saying, because if Kobe Bryant, Kevin Durant, and LeBron James made a shoe about racism, then they would sell out because everybody would be on their side because they are really...
Because they're professionals.
Yeah, because they're professionals, and everyone looks up to them like children of all type of races.
Do you think they're afraid to speak up?
I personally think it hasn't really came to their thought. They might be afraid because of what the media says about them, and they could lose fans, and they could get in trouble about it, NBA.
Yeah, I think they might be afraid to say something because the consequences might take away from their contract, and that would probably hurt them.
So basically what you're saying is if you're willing to sacrifice the lives of, you know, people versus material gain, to say. So say, for instance, you had $1 million contract and it can, you know, significantly change your life. If your contract said either you don't speak about racism and we'll give you $1,000, how would you feel about that? Would you speak about it and lose the contract, or are you strong enough to say, hey, the money's not an issue, people's lives are more important?
I feel I would personally speak about it because the money isn't more important in someone's life. And I feel like it's not fair. And there should be a change with racism.
So, how do you feel there?
I would speak about it because why would my contract tell me not to speak about something like that for me to earn money? Why can't you just give me money for the way that I play the game?
Because remember Rashad Mendenhall, he lost $1 billion contract from Champion when he spoke up against the presidential administration killed Gaddafi. I don't know if it was Gaddafi or Bin Laden, and he spoke up not for him, but for injustice. He said killing is wrong, regardless of, you know, who it is. He said there could have been some other consequences, but just killing somebody for the sake of they killed them, when people was praising it, the fact that he tweeted that, he lost $1 million contract. So speaking up against something, so stuff like that are in contracts. So that's something that we, you know, just being student athletes, we got to have more power before we sign that contract, thoroughly reading it. You know, just like if someone, you know, it's almost like you sign your life away, saying, hey, you don't even read the contract. They're going to give me $20 million and I'm going to just play football and don't speak.
Yeah.
That's what happens a lot of times.
I feel that isn't right. It shouldn't be like that.
So how do we change that? How can we change it?
Stand up as one.
Gotcha. So almost have like a unified front, like a union for like a players union. That's like, you know, starting at a high school level as well. I think, you know, they have player unions for like professional teams, but if we start organizing as athletes on a high school level, just attacking, you know, academic stuff too. I think by the time you do make it professional, I think people have a little better understanding. Because I think people 22 years old don't really have a clue sometimes if they're not introduced to it at an early age.
All in silence, bound in jail, had no one to go their bail, keep your hands on their plow.
man's name is a mighty sweet. Soon one day I'm afraid we're going to meet. Keep your hands on that plow. Hold on.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Streaming Justice, music and conversation about civil rights, past, present, and future, in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King, with Vaughn Madden,
Karan Poe,
and Theron Coleman.
If you would like and want to hear and want to join the conversation, we would love to have your participation. You can call or text us at 412-200-5975. And please consider letting other people know the Streaming Justice continues until midnight at slbradio.org. So we're going to jump in and have a discussion around white silence, and particularly the Pittsburgh police chief having a sign and, you know, hashtagging the ending white silence at work. How do you guys feel about white silence, or what does white silence mean to you?
I feel this is saying, like, African Americans and everyone else who's against whites getting away with anything should stand up and go against it. I feel like the chief, that did it, he wasn't wrong, but like people, the whites that are in his race, feel like he shouldn't be going against them, his own race.
I agree with what Karan said, because they think that he might be on the opposing side and instead of their side, and feel some type of way about it. But he's right with doing what he did, because some officers get away with doing other things and think that they shouldn't be doing, and their partners don't say anything because they might get in trouble.
Vaughn, how do you feel about it?
Particularly about the cop making that statement. When I first, because I know a little, some small background about the chief and like where he came from, you know, coming from Madison, Wisconsin, and that particular area not having the type of crime as Pittsburgh. I feel all the negative things that was going, you know, comments about him, I feel that he had just not even a glimpse of how African Americans feel on a daily basis. He was getting a lot of negative comments towards him, but that's just something we've been going through mm-hmm. since we, you know, came. So I had a few different perspectives. I feel that he should have, you know, it's not just ending white silence, it's ending silence in general, because we have silence not just with cops, you know, doing injustice, but we have parents doing injustice to children. We have, you know, injustice everywhere when it comes to, you know, distributing wealth equally. People don't have no sound, you know, people are silent about that. So I think it was a good thing that he made that statement, but it's just I think he used it as a tool to spark the conversation around it. So how do you feel about, you know, white silence in school? Can you relate that particular statement that the police chief made? Do you see white silence inside of your schools?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was an incident. Like, there's blacks that say nigga to whites, and there's whites that say nigga to blacks, and everyone just laughs about it like it's okay. And I feel it shouldn't be like that.
Do you feel that no one should say it, or it should be just black people should say it and white people can't say it?
No one should say it at all.
I agree with that, because that's just basically ignorance speaking, and no one else should be saying it at all.
Right.
Like, the whites used to say nigger to blacks, and we got offended. So why could we call a white a nigger, or why could a white call us a nigger? It's still not right overall, because it's basically saying the same thing.
Do you think people use it loosely because they don't truly understand the meaning behind it?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you know the meaning behind it? What's, like, the N-word?
From what I know, what the N-word is, it's just what whites called African-Americans back then.
I know that the word nigger means someone with lack of knowledge, and that everyone could be a nigger, but that don't still give you the right to call anyone that.
Yeah.
And this, the word just became derogatory because it was, you know, directed towards one race for a long period of time. And that's where I think the insult comes, you know, because a lot of people try to use that now. It means, a lack of knowledge, so I can say that word to anybody, but just in the context of that word, it shouldn't be used for notice. And nobody, anything that's causing harm is wrong to me. So how do we fight against white silence?
We speak up when we see someone doing and saying things that they shouldn't be saying at all.
Yeah, don't sit back and just let it happen.
So being willing to have a courageous conversation, because, you know, as anytime you talk about religion, politics, and race, them's like the big three no-nos. In certain settings, it gets super uncomfortable. I think setting the right platform and trying to use facts and not just how you feel, because feelings change by day. So this is something that it's a touchy subject.
I agree with what you're saying, because opinionated conversations sometimes end up in fights, and facts or just facts. You can't fight, and you can't fight facts because they're right.
This is all the time we have. Thank you for supporting Streaming Justice. This is Karan Poe.
Darren Coleman.
And this is the Executive Director of Shadow Student Athletes, Vaughn Madden. You can follow us, keep up with the information. You can go to www.shadowstudentathletes.org and also www.aiminitiative.org or AIM Pittsburgh, and follow us at Shadow My Moments.
One day when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory, glory.
Oh,
glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtapositioning us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours.